BBC News.
Which was presented this evening by Jane Steele.
Storyteller.
I think what drives me on has always been curiosity.
Activist.
Definitely was a builder of the bridge between music and charity.
Superstar.
17 Grammy Awards, 4 Brit Awards, 2 Ivor Novello Awards.
This is the story of Sting.
Eras. Sting.
How a boy done good from the terraces of Wall's End to sold-out stadiums across the world. Join me, Vernon Kay, as I get into the career of one of Britain's best-selling artists.
I knew I could sing, I knew I could play. I just needed to get lucky.
Listen now on BBC Sounds. Just search Eras Sting.
Is extracting the voices of dead musicians, digitally de-aging living actors, are relying on AI algorithms to pick a future husband or wife, creepy or cool. In 45 minutes, Professor Michael Sandel of Harvard University, Radio 4's public philosopher, discusses these and other questions. But now, Radio 4, we're back in Edinburgh experiencing the Fringe Festival with host Mark Watson.
For the past month, Edinburgh has been packed full of performers and punters enjoying the biggest arts festival in the world, the Edinburgh Fringe. I'm comedian Mark Watson, and I've been coming to the Fringe for 24 years. So as this year's festival draws to a close, I'm going to catch up with some of the best comedians performing here and drop in to hear a bit of their shows to bring you the truest Fringe experience you can get without being flyed every 30 seconds. A bit later, I'm going to head to the ceremony for the prestigious Edinburgh Comedy Awards and chat to the winners. Let's head out into town and see who's about. This is Fresh from the Fringe. We are now in a sort of cafe with Anya Magliano, just right on the meadows where a lot of Fringe performers can be seen almost every minute of the day. This is your third year on the spin, isn't it? How are you finding it?
This third year, I've done something different, which is in the other 2 years I've been very like monk-like for the first 2 weeks, and then in the second 2 weeks I've sort of got a bit wild.
Interesting. Yeah,
this year I did the reverse.
Really? You started big and then calmed
down. I started
down.
Kind of big. I was seeing stuff, I was staying out late, and then this morning I made a chicken casserole.
Well, that is not something that most people can say in the final week of the Fringe.
I know.
Most people don't even manage to eat a chicken casserole by this stage.
Yeah. And I've made 3 servings of it minimum.
3 servings, she boasts.
Yeah.
So you've not only made a casserole, but you know you've got a couple of dinners in hand now.
100%. I think maybe even 4.
So that almost see you over the line. If you can stomach eating casserole for most of the rest of the festival.
Which I can, I think.
You've got a casserole per meaningful show left in the bank.
Yeah, exactly.
I read this quote a while ago that really resonated with me. It said that to love, you have to be brave enough to let go of the past. Isn't that powerful? I read that on my boyfriend's ex-girlfriend's Instagram page. I love that page so much, I can't stop looking at it. I first came across it completely by accident when I was Googling her full name. The account came up, I clicked on it. It wasn't private. What a generous woman. But when I went on it, there weren't actually that many posts there. And I was like, that's interesting. She giveth and she taketh away. But not to worry, I'll just add her to the rounds. Okay, for anyone who doesn't know, the rounds are basically where I check the social media accounts of the people who I can't follow because it would be weird, but I still like to keep an eye on what they're up to. I love doing it. I feel like a farmer tending to my crops. It can be people that I like, people I dislike, enemies even. So one that I check quite a lot is this girl who wronged me. She wronged me in primary school. Basically, what she did is she got the same pencil case as me. After I got it, she told everyone that I copied her. Oh. Thank you. This is the thing. I can't call a 7-year-old a bitch. But what I will say is now she works in marketing. I just think that must be hard for someone with no original ideas. Another one that I check is my ex-boyfriend's new girlfriend. She's a burlesque dancer, and that's fine. That's fine. I just find that very interesting more than anything else because he couldn't have picked someone more different to me. I'm not a burlesque dancer. And I don't think I ever will be unless there's a type of burlesque that is exclusively forward roles. But Will, who's my boyfriend, his ex is the one that I check the most. I check that the most because they went out for 8 years. Hello? 8 years. That is too long. I just think if he loved me, he wouldn't have done that. I never told him that I was doing it, by the way. If anything, I actually threw him off the scent. Anytime he'd even mention his ex's name, I'd be like, who's that? Is that your mum? You've got to get in there a little bit from time to time. And then one day I was doing, this is the thing, I did sometimes get worried. I got worried of like, is it bad to do this from a feminist perspective? Don't worry, I realise not at all. Not at all. If anything, it's actually the most feminist thing you can do in that situation, isn't it? Because I've never met her. So I've only ever heard about her from him. So if I don't look, that's erasing a woman's voice. And I'm a feminist. So one day I was doing the rounds. It was already quite exciting. The burlesque dancer had got a new wig. And I got to Will's ex and something huge had happened. She'd done a new post. The new post was announcing that her and her new boyfriend had bought a van. They were renovating the van and they'd made a whole new Instagram account just for the van. I was like, oh my God, what a bountiful harvest we have here. The van needed so much work. I was like, these fruits are going to get us through the cold, cold winter. They were posting so much about the van. I think I might be the only person who's been with them every single step of the way. I'm so proud of what they've achieved, and I can't tell them that. That's cruel. That makes me feel like I'm a dead relative watching from heaven. I did have one moment where I thought, oh, you're going to judge me for this, but I thought, what if I made a fake account? Just so that I could get a little bit more involved, just comment the stuff I was thinking, you know, nice wheels. But I did realise I think that would be a step too far, because it would be a slippery slope after that, wouldn't it? First, you're making a fake account to follow the van. Next, you're dressing up as a mini fridge and living in it with them. That's my dream. And then one day, Will went to a party with some people who know her, and he came back from the party and he said to me, I found out this funny thing about my ex, right? Apparently now, she's moved to France. And I was like, in her van. Whoopsie. And he said, how do you know about that? And I said, well, it's actually very feminist of me. But I keep looking at her account. I don't know why. I can't stop. Maybe I was a bit jealous at first, but now I'm just really invested in her content. She's so good at DIY. And he said, oh, that's fine. You don't need to keep that a secret from me. You can tell me anything. Like, you don't feel like you have to hide anything. And I thought that was quite nice, isn't it? It's nice. Yeah, so we're all on the same page now. I mean, mostly. He doesn't know that I subscribe to the van's newsletter. But that's just a treat for me. I don't think a fake email account is as bad. VanyaMagliano@gmail.com. They just think it's a Russian bot.
It is now properly raining, and so we've taken refuge in one of the Monkey Brothers bars, just on Cowgate. I'm here with Mary-Elaine Robertson. Cowgate has quite a strange place within the fringe. In a sense, it's the absolute centre of the festival, like geographically, but on another hand, it is a place you'll see a lot of people who hate the festival and want you to move out of the way, I think it's fair to say.
Oh my God, it's the Belly of Edinburgh. It's a street that shouldn't exist. It's beneath the city itself.
Apparently, your show is so disgusting that people faint.
And that to me is really funny.
I've seen people faint in fringe shows, especially with how hot the room is. But did you know that this was a subject that was going to make people feel uncomfortable? Well, not uncomfortable is not the word, is it? It's a medical thing that you talk about.
I think what I've learned is I have a very high tolerance for body gore, and I wasn't aware that other people don't share this with me.
We're going to hear a little bit of your show now, but especially given that this is tea time on Radio 4, I think it's fair to say we're steering clear of some of the bits. No one at home is likely to faint or feel unwell.
We're doing some of the nice, more comforting parts of the show, like my childhood.
Yes, you're talking about growing up on a farm.
Yeah.
So if that makes you faint, switch off the radio now, but otherwise you should be fine.
A human farm.
Ever since I was a young girl, 7 years old, I have always been planning and daydreaming and scrapbooking for my dream. That's right, funeral. For example, I don't care about my headstone. What I do want to have is a cement cast of my own hand bursting forth from the grave. With a plaque on it that reads, not actual hand. Lest the mortals be afraid. Also, I care a lot about my order of service at my funeral. I want my eulogy to be relatable and hilarious, starting with my childhood growing up on a farm in Shetland, where me and my brother would play in the hills, swim in the sea, and pull back the flesh on a tourist's head to see the colour of the skull beneath. Pink. Fresh bone is much pinker than you can imagine. Next, the eulogy would go into my teenage years, and I would like my funeral to be open and honest and talk about those awkward conversations we have with our parents. Like when we have the talk. You remember the talk? When you teach them how to restart the computer. I planned all my funeral. I'm so excited for it. I can't wait to die. I think sometimes I can seem a bit alarming or strange, but I believe we all have very similar moments in our life and our development. For example, we all learn about the miracle of life in the comfort of our own living rooms through a rectangle on the wall. The difference might be that your rectangle was a television. The miracle of life is a zebra giving birth in the Serengeti and is narrated by Sir David Attenborough. In my living room, the rectangle was the window. The miracle of life is my dad with his arm inside a sheep. And is narrated by my mom saying, why is he wearing his best shirt? Because I grew up on a farm, I did, and nothing teaches you more about death than trying to keep sheep alive. They keep dying. Because we keep eating them. So I want to ingratiate myself to you more. I think I was a normal child. Like me and my brother would play games on the farm. There's one game in particular we loved, but I've been told it's categorically too dangerous and it's irresponsible for me to tell you how to play it. But I think, if anything, natural selection is taking too long. So here's the game. The game's called Pitchfork. See, what would happen is me and my brother would stand 2 feet apart, because that's all we had left over from the tourist. And we'd take a pitchfork between us and we'd throw it in the air like, whew, and then the first one to move loses. But if you move too slowly, you also lose and you have to go to hospital. We had to stop playing it because my dad caught us, and when he saw us playing it, he was so shocked. He's like, no! You'll damage the prongs!
It's now early morning on the final Saturday of the Edinburgh Fringe. I say early morning, 10:30. And I'm heading to the ceremony for this year's Edinburgh Comedy Awards. This is the traditional culmination of the festival. Many previous winners have gone on to have great careers, including Lee Evans, Steve Coogan, The League of Gentlemen, more recently Rose Matafeo, Richard Gadd, and loads more. There are 3 prizes given out at the ceremony: Best Show, Best Newcomer, and then the Panel Prize, which is given out at the panel's discretion to recognise something that has made an impact at this year's festival. And now let's hear who's won this year's Panel Prize.
This year, to honour the spirit and story of the Fringe, the 2024 Victoria Wood Award is awarded to Rob Copeland.
I'm now in a sort of anteroom with the winner of the Panel Prize, Rob Copland, who was brought onto the stage as Copland.
Yeah, Copland.
And devoted some of his acceptance speech to just correcting the surname, quite rightly. Yeah. How do you feel? Genuine question.
Hard to explain. I knew that I was going to win this one, so I wasn't coming into the room thinking like, oh, will I, won't I?
For clarity, the winner of the panel prize is informed the night before. Rob's not just saying, I knew I was going to win, because of some sort of incredible complacency.
I always knew this was going to happen for me.
Yes, you're not saying you manifested it, you're saying you actually got a phone call yesterday.
I feel like in a way I did manifest this, you know. I called the show Gimme and they gave it to me.
I suppose so, yeah. Maybe next year someone should just call their show, I would like the panel prize, please. This is an interesting award because, well, I've won this same prize a million years ago. Thank you. Congratulations for 2006, Mark. But it is a huge pat on the back from the industry, your peers, everyone, I suppose.
Yeah, it's funny. My first show, my debut, I won the Comedian's Choice Award Best Show.
I remember.
And this feels like the critics. So I kind of feel like I've won the critics over. Or the panel critics? I'm not really critics, are they?
No, but you're certainly racking up semi-official prizes. Yeah,
yeah. It's a bipolar victory. I've got the comedians on board, now I've got the panel on board. Now I just need to get the audience going.
Now you just want the public to enjoy your work, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Congratulations again, Rob. And now let's hear who is the 2024 Best Newcomer.
The winner of this award is Joe Kent.
Sitting next to me now with the Best Newcomer Award, the award I lost in 2006, is Joe Kent Waters.
Hi, do you want to hold it?
Well, may I? May I touch this at least? Yeah, it's been 18 years. Minchin never let me have even a look at it. The 4 or 5 days while you were nominee are like quite sort of challenging. Yeah.
Easily the worst shows of the run post-nomination.
That's a common experience, I think, because crowds are suddenly full of people who've expecting something that you weren't previously.
Well, one of them was on mushrooms. One of the audience, yeah.
Yes, that's sort of not exactly ideal for most shows.
Absolutely not. And they were just continuously laughing. They didn't stop.
Which you would think would be a dream, but it's actually not, is it?
In reality, though, it completely ruins the momentum and the tension.
I'm surprised that the legacy of it has been more people on mushrooms in your crowd. Yeah, that's not a common complaint. Enjoy the rest of it however you do it, John.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
And now, finally, we're going to find out who has won the coveted Best Show Award.
The winner of the Don and Eleanor Taffner Best Comedy Show is Amy Glaser.
And I've been joined now by the winner of this year's award, Amy Gledel. In fact, the award is right in front of us.
I'm not letting this out of my sight.
No, well, my friend Tim Key won it 15 years ago and he still totes it around the place. So it'll be in your hand luggage everywhere you go.
Yeah.
I said to you before we were recording, I've seen quite a lot of people express surprise when they've just won something, but you were probably the most dazed looking person
seen. I can't express this enough. I genuinely, I would have put a lot of money on me not winning this.
It's lucky you didn't.
I know, actually. My show
that
is about low self-esteem, so maybe it's on brand.
Yes, you've sort of got yourself into a bit of a paradox now where you're going to be renowned as a winner for a show about low self-esteem. What are you going to do? Are you going to sacrifice the underdog tag and just lean into being a massive success? Or
I reckon. I think I'm going to become a nightmare.
Yeah, maybe it's time. You've always been a really likeable person. But at some point, you've got to jettison that, surely.
It's got to go. 2025, it's not Brat Girl Summer. It's Horrible Woman Autumn. And I'm ready.
I can't wait for you to really just disappoint everyone that supported you thus far. It was. It must be possible to put it into any sort of proper context when it's this recent.
I still can't believe it. I still think there's going to be like a recount or something.
That would be very unpopular now, I think.
Yeah, I'd feel really bad about that.
Get everyone back in the room. Get Richard Osman back. You've got this odd shaped chunk of plastic for your mantelpiece. Yeah.
I'm so thrilled with the award. Because I've been wanting to put up a shelf in my flat.
Oh, well, this is your incentive,
this
surely.
This is my incentive
now.
For a shelf, my first shelf, and it will have one thing on it, and then loads of arrows just pointing to it.
Yeah, signs in the house directing people to go and look at it. Well done, and enjoy putting yourself up. You deserve it.
Thank you so much.
Well, congratulations to all the winners. That's the end of the awards, but it's not quite the end of the Fringe. Let's see if there's a few more people we can chat to and catch their shows. I'm now actually just off the Royal Mile with Hannah Platt. Well, I mean, the Royal Mile is an odd spot in the Fringe because obviously not really, this isn't the Fringe at all, but this is like the iconic site of Edinburgh.
Yeah.
But it's hard to describe, isn't it? Essentially, it's drizzling. There are street performers doing free stuff.
I arranged to meet you at a certain point and then just a show happened around me and I felt like I couldn't leave.
Yeah, the best way to describe the Royal Mile maybe is it just is where things happen around you. You're quite likely if you walk down this street for more than 30 seconds to be harassed by like people dressed as wartime refugees.
Someone lying on the floor and you're like, are you okay? And they're like, I will be if you come to this show.
Yeah. But are you flying for yourself?
I'm not. I think I would be more of a deterrent if I fly.
To your own show.
Yeah. But especially when like the show is kind of about how you have low self-esteem and anxiety.
Yeah, you definitely
and then
should
you're
be
like, come to this show, it's the best at 4 stars. Yeah. You
What's
know?
It about? My crippling self-doubt.
I was trying to think. I find it so awkward to introduce myself to audiences. So I asked my friends how they describe me to other people. I wouldn't recommend that. I wouldn't recommend that. You've got to have a strong stomach when the people that you love most say to you, no, you're really nice. No, there's nothing wrong with you. What are you saying? No, there's nothing wrong with you. You're lovely when people get to know you. That made me feel great. That made my self-esteem skyrocket when I realised I was the human version of when you recommend your pals a TV show. You're saying it gets good in season 6. I don't know why my friends need that disclaimer for me. I think maybe because I'm quite a quiet person, but I don't mind being quiet, right? If you're a quiet person like me, I'll give you a tip, right? If you're involved in a conversation and you're not enjoying it, just don't have it. Just don't have it, just stop it. You know, because what loud people do, they've got us covered, right? They've got it covered. I do like doing that on first dates. I was once on a date with this bloke, and if you're sat there being like, oh, I thought she was going to say, woman, congratulations, you figured out in about a minute what took me 24 years. I was on a date with this bloke, right? And it suddenly occurred to me that I hadn't said a word for 40 minutes. But he was having the best time. He loved it. I was his dream girl, you know? He was like, we've got so much in common. I was like, I've told you my name and it's not Matthew. But suddenly you can see the self-awareness come over his face, right? This does happen sometimes with a lot of people. And what they try and do to get you back on side is they give you a compliment. But the compliment that this young man gave me on our first date was that I was unconventionally attractive. I didn't know what to do with that. So when I went home alone, after this date, trying to make myself feel better about being called unconventionally attractive, I Googled it. Don't do that. It didn't make me feel any better when I Googled unconventionally attractive and all that came up was a picture of Ian Beale. It's not the look I'm after, you know. The last time I went on a date with a bloke, he said I was striking. That's Steve Buscemi, innit? I do really read into comments that people make about what I look like. Whether it's good or bad, right? I'm the type of person that if you compliment me, I will stay up for weeks on end to figure out the insult you actually meant. But I have been going to therapy now. All right, I've got to say therapy in a stupid voice, otherwise you'll think I'm a knob. Not you guys. If you guys say you're going to therapy, you're working on yourself. That's good for you. I don't know if you're aware of this. It is one rule for me and one rule for the rest of you, right? I don't know when that was decided. I don't know if it was like when I was crowning, you know, I was coming out my mum and they were like, oh no, that one's off. That one's off, That one's gonna have to say sincere things in a stupid voice, otherwise it's gonna melt. But no, congratulations, it's a girl. An unconventionally attractive one, but... she's going to have a cracking personality. Some of you don't seem convinced. But yeah, I'm going to therapy now, right? Therapy is all right, but I don't like the whole self-help trend now. It feels like a con. It feels like it's just made to sell us endless jelly cats, right? I don't like self-help. I don't like the self-help products, you know? I've got so many of these self-help products. My flat looks like Oliver Bonus, right? I've got so many of them. That one day when I was feeling really bad about myself, I just did them all at once. So I put on my weighted blanket, I'm colouring in, I've got my whale sounds on, I've got a sad lamp, I've got my oil lavender diffuser, and you know what? I've never felt more mentally ill. In my life.
We're in the dying embers of the festival now. We're going to, in a moment, finish on a song, as is traditional. And the song's going to be supplied by the man standing next to me now, Hugh Davis.
Hello, Mark Watts.
Firstly, hi, Hugh. You're the final person I'm talking to about the festival, so it's sort of you have the opportunity to give a postscript. How have you found this long, gruelling experience?
It's been actually very similar to the other experiences I've had, all at this festival every single year at the same time.
Yes, you go into a sort of a mindset that's not like the other 11 months of the year.
Yeah, it's sort of like there's an exhaustion to it. For me, I think it's quite strange to have an experience in which you're in the same room every day saying the same things in a slightly different way to slightly different audiences. And it's just it's an insane way to live, to be talking for an hour every day.
Would you say you've enjoyed it? And you don't have to say yes.
No, I have enjoyed it. It's my funnest show yet. The show is really different every day because there's a lot of audience stuff built into the show. and it's just a really it's really silly show, so I'm enjoying it.
So the song is about your grandma's Pokemon skills.
Yeah, she was a Pokemon master, and it's a song about what it's like to grow up in that time. It was a difficult time, difficult childhood, and none was harder than the Pokemon master. I'm here to talk about my grandmother. She was an Asian lady, and in many ways, she still is. But my grandma, she had a very tough childhood, and I'd like to relay that to you now. So here we go.
When I was a young girl, I went to see the professor. He said, I have a special task for you. I would like you to go out into the world and see all the magical creatures and register them in a Pokédex in a world of Pokémon. In a world of Pokémon. I said, oh, that sounds incredible. What an adventure for me. All of the places I could go, all of the things I'll see. I will see as many Pokemon as the eye is willing to show. Do I just get pictures of them, or do I just write them down? Or do I just write them down? He said, oh, it doesn't work like that. The Pokédex is very specific. It doesn't take descriptions or even register pictures. This is going to sound quite strange. The Pokédex only works if you capture all the animals and then make them your slaves. Oh, then you make them your slaves. I said, oh, what an adventure. I've never really had any slaves, but I can see a problem about space. Oh, but how will I store them? How will I store them all? He said, don't you worry, dear girl, you can force them into balls. Oh, force them into the balls, force them all in. I said, oh, that sounds like quite a lot. I am literally 10. Are you sure they want to go in the balls? They seem sentient. Oh, but how will I pay for travel? I haven't got any cash. He said, don't you worry, dear girl, you can make them fight for money on the road, sweet child. Make them all fight in a big arena full of all children. All fight, and the Pokemon, they'll grow big, big and strong, big and three times bigger than they'll evolve. Big, but the balls, they'll stay the same size. Yes, and after you become a Pokemon master at the ripe old age of 12, I wanted to go out in the world. I wanted to catch every single one of those little pricks. Send them all to me! Send them all to me! Not a single area will be free from me! Even the skies won't be safe! You've got to catch them all! Catch them all! But also try to make friends. I said, hey, Professor, can I see your degree?
And that's the festival done for another year. Thanks for joining us on our journey around Edinburgh, and goodbye for now. Fresh from the Fringe was hosted by me, Mark Watson, and featured sets from Anya Magliano, Mary-Elaine Robertson, Hannah Platt, and Hugh Davis. Additional material by Christina Riggs. The assistant producer was Becky Kirro-Jeffries, and it was produced in Edinburgh by Gwyn Rhys-Davis. It was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 4.
And we're back in Edinburgh later. Sue Pollard and Sinead Gleeson are on Loose Ends from the Edinburgh Festivals at 9 tonight.
This Cultural Life, where guests reveal the most significant cultural influences on their creativity.
To this day, I am still terrified of Bill Sykes. Usually, if I speak about him long enough, you will start to see the goose pimples.
In the new series, the novelist Marlon James and the opera star Dame Kiri Takanawa.
I sing in the car a lot. Keeps me awake because I sing along with Barry White. And I don't mind Amy Winehouse either.
And we'll hear from the crime novelist Lee Child.
David and Goliath was no doubt bought at a jumble sale. I read it, but I loved Goliath. Goliath was my favourite.
Radio 4's This Cultural Life with me, John Wilson, on BBC Sounds. Available now.